scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
It is a Friday, December 13th, and we are underway on this Friday the 13th on this hour of Flames Talk. Steinberg along with you, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's a Friday, and that means it is time for the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus, please play responsibly. And Eric Francis joins us now from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Mr. Francis, welcome aboard. How are we doing?
I'm excellent, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. We'll see if the technology allows you to sound as crystal clear as you do right now for the entire Eric Francis Hour. My fingers and toes are crossed. Hey, man.
I have my doubts. As
do I. But you know what?
That's okay.
Sometimes there are pleasant surprises. You know what? Speaking of which, how's this? Right from my predecessor's bag of tricks, how's this for a segue? You know what else is a pleasant surprise? Jonathan Huberdeau of late. That's right from the Rob Kerr bag of tricks right there.
Wow.
Jonathan Huberdeau is, you wrote about this over at sportsnet.ca on Friday morning. It's live right now. Two more points in an 8-3 loss to Tampa Bay, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later on this hour. But two more points for Jonathan Huberdeau. He now has 9 points in his last 6 games in the midst of a 6-game point-scoring streak. Is this the best Jonathan Huberdeau has ever looked as a member of the Calgary Flames, my friend? If so, why? Tell us about the gist of the column, and then let's dive in.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say that this is the best he's ever looked as a Flame. And it's not saying a whole lot, but it's certainly, you know, I don't want to take anything away from all the hard work he's put into transforming his game into more of a 200-foot game. And I think that's pretty obvious. You watch, he's in a whole lot more battles now. You know, he's trying to be more diligent in his own zone, and he's trying to generate offense from being a better defensive player. You know, he had that conversation in the offseason with Ryan Huska where he's basically said, look, I'm dying for more ice time. Like, how can I get more ice time? And it's a chicken and the egg thing, right? He hasn't really earned that much more ice time over the previous 2 years because he wasn't even probably a top 4 or 5 forward on the team. But they kind of came to an agreement that, look, why don't we use you as a penalty killer this year? And that will keep you in the flow of the game, even on nights when there's a whole lot of penalties, and it'll keep you more engaged just throughout every game and teach you a little bit more about defensive hockey. You know, there's that theory out there that, you know, that run and gun style that he played in Florida, that was the biggest transition he had to make from Florida to Calgary, which is they used to play games and try to win them all 7-6 in Florida when he was there. And now he came here and they're trying to win games 2-1. And that is a major shift in a mindset, in the way you play as a scoring winger, as a playmaking winger. So I really think that he's improved his defensive play, and I think it's set up this reunion with Nazem Kadri, which I know it's only 6 games in, but it's the first semblance of a top line that we've seen in basically 4 years. And you tell me if you think I'm wrong. Like, I remember when Daryl Sutter first inherited Huberdeau, he told me, I remember calling him at his farm, and the first thing he said is, well, my first order of business is I got to find out if he's a Kadri guy or a Lindholm guy. Like, who does he mesh with?
I remember listening to that interview live.
Yeah, and he never got an answer. His answer was neither. He never really meshed with either. So I'll throw that back at you, though. Like, I know it's only 6 games, but I thought the passing that those guys exhibited in the first period last night, there was a lot of tic-tac-toeing going on with him and Kadri and Pospisil, and I think we saw it in the previous game, and I think over the 6 games where they've accrued quite a number of points, like, I don't know if it's going to last. We've seen all sorts of different lines come and go, but is that not the closest semblance to a legit top line that we've had in the last 3 years since Johnny and,
for sure,
and Matthew Tkachuk left?
Yeah. Yeah, that line, I mean, the line of Gaudreau, Tkachuk, and Lindholm is one of the best lines we've ever seen as ever. A member of the Flames. And so, yeah, I don't think it's going to live up to that. I know that's not what you're saying either, but I think you're right. And I took note of it when Ryan Huska said it a little earlier this week. I know you included the same quote in your column because I'd even been thinking about that. I was like, geez, if this can go, if this can turn into something consistent and something longstanding, I don't remember what game it was coming out of because they put them together in the third period of that dismal Pittsburgh loss to wrap up the four-game road trip. They had a couple of points there, and I remember talking to a couple Flames people when they came back off the road, and you know the feel was going into the emotional Tuesday night against Columbus. From a hockey standpoint, the feel was, you know, that period with Kadri and Huberdeau together, they actually looked pretty good, and I know it was garbage time, but I want to see if that can build. I want to see if that was genuine. And there was some genuine optimism that there was something even in that 20 minutes. And so it carried over into Columbus and it carried over into St. Louis. And then, you know, it's taken off from there, where now in the six games they've played together or whatever it is, they've got a combined 15 points. Yeah, six games, 15 combined points, 9 for Jonathan, 6 for Kadri. And you're like, okay, you know, maybe there is something to this. And if that does turn into something that they can keep together for 15, 20, 25 games, something like that, you're right. That is no questions asked the number one line on the team. Like, how many times have you been looking at your Twitter and typing out lines, or have I been putting out lines and you're like, what the hell? Like, which one do I put first here? Like, who's the first line? Yeah. Who's the third line? Well, if Kadri, Huberdeau, and if it's Pospisil or anybody else on that line, but if Kadri and Huberdeau as a duo continue to be productive, there's no question who the number one line is, because Kadri's this team's number one center or best center. And at least offensively, right? And Huberdeau not only is the highest paid player in franchise history, but when he's going and when he is feeling right, he's still there, probably their most dynamic offensive winger, and has looked a whole lot more as such over the last six games. So, no, I completely agree that if this turns into something more than five games in a period of them looking good together, I think it's a big boost. And that's why when Wes Gilbertson, I know you've never heard of him, but when Wes Gilbertson asked Ryan Huska about that on Thursday, he said, how encouraging is it that these guys are maybe showing some chemistry? And Ryan Huska said, to be honest, like, really encouraging. I'm not gonna lie. And I'm curious to see if this can last for a little while longer.
Yeah, I mean, and I think I heard you on the way home from the game last night talking to one of the callers about Pospisil's role on the line. And over these six games, he's only got one assist. But listen, there have been lots of top lines in hockey. And like, I won't – it's not exactly the same, but like, you just look around the league. Like, look at Winnipeg, for example. There's usually two guys that are collecting all the points, and the third guy's – you know, he does all right, but he doesn't collect the points like everybody else. And – like Gabe Vilardi's kind of that guy. He's had a good start to this season, but you know what I mean? And Pospisil, I still think, is a very important ingredient in that line. And I know he's not grabbing points, but I do agree with the belief that Huberdeau peddles, that he creates room for me and for Kadri to do what we do. So I like the trio. I like what they did with some of the lines today to get, obviously, Coleman and Backlund. I think it was high time that they get back together. They seem lost without each other. That's not fair to say, but just they're so much better together than apart. And to put Coronado back there, because I think anybody who plays with those guys benefits. And I just kind of like some of the things that they've done of late. Listen, we may see line changes all season long. Like, this was never a thing in past years where we would be pumping out the lines every day. And, you know, but they're trying so hard with a team that's what did I say, 27th in the league in scoring right now. They're just trying to do whatever they can. And I think it starts at the top. It starts with finding a true number one line. And if you can do that, it would be great. And boy, what a great line. I'm sure you've talked about it already on the air, but what a great line from Huberto saying basically, yeah, I'm back with Kadri because I played with everybody else.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. So now I'm back to the beginning again. What, you know, I get asked about Huberto all the time, especially from out of town radio stations. And I just, the one thing I will always say is like, he's handled all this with like such a champion, like self-deprecating humor. You know, he still keeps his chin up. He answers every question. Like, this guy has tremendous leadership qualities to him, despite the fact that he's not leading in points the way he used to. But again, I think defensively he's playing better. Now, all this said, it's not all sunshine and lollipops and unicorns. The giveaway he gave to Kucherov last night, which kickstarted Kucherov's record-setting night, you know, that was egregious. That was a simple decision to go left or right. Left would have been the easy bailout, but right, he was trying to make a play, and that's what playmakers do. And he's been guilty in the past of trying to force too many plays, and it comes back and bites him in the butt. And that was a classic example of it last night. Kucherov goes on a breakaway, scores his goal, and 5 points later, he's got a six-point night. So I'm not blaming Huberto on that, but, you know, even through this stretch of six games, Huberto is a minus one in four separate games along the way. So it's not perfect, but baby steps.
Yeah, by the way, you're talking about this clip.
I mean, I think I've tried with everybody, so I had to go back with the first one. So it's did the full cycle.
That is what you're referring to from Thursday
so
morning. I loved it. It was like, and that's kind of been, it's one of the things I wrote down when knowing we were going to talk about this. Like, you're right. Throughout his entire tenure here, I remember it was probably late October in his first season, and it had gotten off to a very poor start, and he was about, I don't know, 10 games or so into his tenure as a member of the Flames, and I remember it was, I believe it was an off day, or it wasn't a practice day. They did like an off-ice workout, and Jonathan came out, and instead of doing media in the locker room, he came out to the hallway and did it in front of that backdrop, and he answered probably 15, 20 questions about the poor start to his season. And I remember walking away from it, and Labardius was walking beside me. He said, you know what that was? That was accountability. And I remember that because I was like, yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was the first time that he really had been answering questions about things not meeting expectations. And obviously has answered many more of those questions since that time. But can you remember a point where he ever was making excuses? Like, you know, we know he hated playing on the right side, but while he was playing on the right side, he wasn't saying, yeah, well, I'm playing on the right side, that's why I'm not having success. Like, at no point have I ever remembered a time when Jonathan Huberto has said, well, no, it's this guy's fault, or it's the coach's fault, or it's conditions. Like, throughout the entire time, he's taken accountability for not being as good as he wants or the team needs or Flames fans want. And I know he takes plenty of slings and arrows on the outside. I know he is not a fan favorite, but for many, because of how things have gone, and there's a feeling that, you know, he doesn't care or he doesn't try hard or whatever, which I disagree with quite vehemently. And mainly because, I mean, this guy has always come out to answer the bell. And when he's mostly self-deprecating when things are going well, and he's quite accountable when things aren't going well.
Absolutely. And I know that doesn't mean anything to the fans, who they don't deal with him on a daily basis. It means a lot to us and probably nobody else. But I think his teammates also see that accountability. Excuse me. And they know how hard this has been for him. Are you kidding me? Like, he's a proud guy. And this has been tough. But we've talked about him at length, you know, about the struggles. But I do see signs that he's you know, he's kind of finding a better path out of this.
How sustainable do we think this is? Like, what we're seeing from Huberto is, first of all, at no point did we ever suggest that, hey, you know what? I bet Jonathan Huberto comes here, leads the team in goals on December 13th, has more goals than assists on December 13th, and is scoring all his goals from the top of the crease. Like, that is, at no point did I think we ever telegraphed that's going to be what Huberto is. And yet, as we're talking about probably his most effective season of the three that he's played with the Flames, That's been it. He does have more goals than assists. He does lead the team in goals. And of those 11 goals, a vast majority have been close in, right? They've been goals right on top of the crease or right around the crease or puck battles won or loose pucks that he's dug up.
Yeah.
That is where, because I don't know if I'm quite on board with the, well, he's turned into a really strong defensive player, because I don't know if I fully agree on that. I think he has committed himself more and is definitely there. He's been better away from the puck. I still think there's some, you know, areas where there could be some improvement, but
for sure.
Offensively, I think there really has been a transformation in terms of where we've seen his game go.
Excuse me. Yeah. I'm not going to sit here and say he's a great defensive player either, but I'm saying he's trying and he's paying more attention to it.
Agreed.
Putting more effort into it for sure. I'm going to get our stats guys at Sportsnet to throw together heat maps of, you know, where all his goals have come over the last 4 or 5 years. And I bet there's going to be a noticeable trend in them, in that they come from a lot closer in, like you said. And I think, you know, anybody who's struggling with their game will tell you, as a goal scorer, and not that he's a goal scorer. I mean, he's scored 30 twice, but they'll tell you that you just got to get in there and get some greasy ones. And those are kind of the ones he's getting these days. And I don't think Flames fans care how he gets them, as long as he gets them. So he's on pace now for over 30 this year, which is encouraging. Again, it's early, but, you know, the alternative would be for us to be sitting here talking about, geez, we're not seeing anything different from the guy.
Yeah.
And nobody has any kind of solutions. And he's literally gone through the roster of trying to play with everybody. They even moved him over to the right side. Nothing worked. Well, he's taken it upon himself to try and change the narrative. So good on him.
And, you know, also, which I think is important, he's on pace for more points than he's had as a member of the Flames 30 games into a season, which, you know, I know that's a low bar, but last year at no point was he on pace to be higher than the 55 points he had in year one. And then he had that miserable month of December where he went pointless until New Year's Eve and finally got his first point of the month on the final day of the month.
Wow.
Like that, which is still hard to wrap your head around. And for a good chunk of November, you know, I know Wes wrote the story, for instance, about that. Like, There was a stretch there where he was kind of on pace for 45, 46 points. You're like, he's going to get even less than the year before. And this recent run of form has turned it into now he's kind of on pace for around 57, 58 points. And if he continues to be close or around point per game, right now he's got 9 in his last 6, then all of a sudden, maybe we could see 60-plus points or flirting with 70 points for Jonathan Huberdeau. And I don't know. I don't know if at the end of last season I really ever saw that being a possibility, and maybe it feels a little more likely than it did at any point prior to maybe the last couple of weeks here.
Given where he's come from, I remember the discussion at the beginning of the year revolving around what's a good year look like for Jonathan Huberdeau, and I think most people kind of agreed if he got somewhere between 70 and 80 points, or, you know, flirted with being a point-a-game guy, I think people would be pretty happy with that, especially given where he's come from. Now, when you're paid $10.5 million a year, the expectation is for you to be flirting with 90 and 100. But I think given the circumstances, you know, somewhere between 70 and 80 would be considered a pretty successful season in terms of his rebound. And I don't think you could dispute that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty impressed with what we've seen from him over the last little bit. And again, we'll see. We'll see if this is sustainable. We've seen decent runs from him at different times throughout his Flames career, and they haven't necessarily been sustainable. So we'll see. And you know, the other thing is, I think Kadri is really enjoying playing with Jonathan. I mean, both guys have talked, and it's I don't know if this is something that kind of has evolved over their 2+ years together or has been more of a recent thing, but I don't know if you've picked up on it yourself, but they've both talked about how, like, they've developed like a really close friendship over the last over the last number of weeks. We've heard that from both Jonathan and Nazem. Like, I don't know if that was a summer thing. I don't know if that was a last season thing. I don't know if it was a bonding against Daryl Sutter thing. I don't know. But That's also something I hadn't heard before about, like, hey, we're really close off the ice as well, and they've built up a really good rapport, and now they're playing on a line together again. Now that's quite interesting to me, because it feels like Kadri is also really enjoying playing with Huberdeau, which is obviously an important factor to the whole thing too.
Look, I mean, on paper, this was always supposed to be the way it was going to go down, right? You got a pure passer and you got a pure shooter. And you put them together as the two highest paid guys on the team, they should mesh. I mean, that's the goal when you assemble these sort of duos. And it just hasn't worked out. And yeah, if you can bet they've had conversations with it off the ice to talk about that. And maybe that's how they've kind of bonded and grown closer together. We haven't really delved too much more into – we haven't explored the relationship the way we did when it was Peltier – and Huberdeau, you
right.
know, that father-son-like relationship where he kind of took the young Frenchman under his wing and wined and dined him and taught him how to be an NHLer and all that sort of stuff. It's different. But again, I they both did mention that, and it was not lost on me when they mentioned it.
Yep. Yeah, that was kind of interesting. It's the Eric Francis Hour, Steinberg and Francis along with you. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. My name is Pat Steinberg. As Flames Talk continues, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. I do have to say, you know, as an ongoing theme, after we found out the revelation of my huge win at Chuck-a-Puck last week, I had a tight turn. We also revealed I got a little bit more intel about what happened. So here's the backstory. A few weeks ago, Francis on the Eric Francis Hour is like, oh, by the way, I've got you down for $20 for my son's Chuck-a-Puck at a tournament we're doing next weekend. And I said, oh, okay, sure. You know, absolutely. I would love to help the Francis. It's one of my favorite families. Of course. You know how I feel about you. So I'm absolutely. And then, so, okay, on we go. And then didn't hear anything of it and kind of slipped my mind. I was always good for it. So then you come up to me last week and you're like, hey, you still owe me $20. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I immediately went into my wallet because I never carry cash on me. But for whatever reason, I was carrying cash that day. And I was like, oh, yeah, absolutely. And I was about to give you 20. He goes, no, you're good. Get me later. I was like, oh, okay, that's weird, but all right.
I just wanted to check. I wanted to make sure you were still, you know, intending to pay.
You were testing my integrity, and for a rare time I passed an integrity test. And then that last Friday, you revealed that the test was because I had won. And so you had sent me a picture of the list of people that were on the Chuck-a-Puck list. And I was like, before this happened, I was like, oh, that's my dentist, Jeff Morihira, over at Morihira Dental in the Suncor Center. So ironically, on this Friday, tight turn, didn't get out of the Saddle Dome until about 12:30, 7 a.m. in the dentist chair this morning. But I was back with Doc Morihira, and he gave me some more intel because I was like, I'll get him to throw him. I'm like, oh, yeah, get the – but he said, yeah, it was too much pressure. It was too much pressure, and he also had already gotten like an arm's length of pucks because his son plays on your son's team. And so that's when, after he declined for good reason, that's when your son and your wife decided to throw my pucks, of which one. And it's been that's the new intel, or just a little bit more filling in the blanks from what happened at the tournament.
Yeah, filling. Good play on words, filling.
You
are up $200, and I do believe we have a plan now to spend that over a bar. Anyway, we won't get into the details there, but we're going to celebrate Christmas and your big windfall all at the same time. I that's not to say you're paying. You don't have to pay. But if you're going to have $200 in your pocket, you might as well bring it to the bar.
I think I'd like to contribute somehow. I'd like to contribute with this. This shouldn't just go into my bank account. I think this should go in and be spread around for good cheer. And that's
help the economy.
Exactly.
Help the economy.
I'm all about infusing right back into our economy. It is the Eric Francis Hour. Eric Francis is on Twitter at Eric Francis. My name is Pat Steinberg. We are underway this hour. Lots more still to talk about. Hey, somebody had 6 points at the Dome on Thursday. We'll see if we can get to the bottom of who that was. The Eric Francis Hour rolls on, brought to you by our friends at Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry cares for their horses, employs Albertans, and contributes to the economy. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Eric Francis Hour continues on this Friday the 13th with Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. It's Pat Steinberg on Flames Talk. Usually, Eric Francis writes for Sportsnet.ca about the Calgary Flames. He wrote, it was more Flames adjacent on Thursday night. Hey, I guess when somebody rolls into the Saddle Dome and puts up 6 points like Nikita Kucherov did against the Flames, that kind of becomes the story, doesn't it?
I thought so. And listen, I think at the end of the day, it was not a bad game. Like, obviously, it was not a good night for the Calgary Flames, and it was a horrific third period, and it was embarrassing and all that. But, you know, they did keep it close. It was a one-goal game going into the third, and we've been in that position all season long, it seems like, and the Flames generally respond favorably. So, you know, it was a bad night. We'll leave it at that. But I thought it was far more interesting to talk about a guy who just got 6 points. And it was such a ho-hum affair for him. Two anecdotes I'll share with you. One is he didn't even come out and talk after the game. Like,
He didn't talk at all, hey?
No, he didn't even come and talk. Like, and I don't think he's all that prolific when it comes to talking after games. You don't often see quotes from him. And, you know, I think language is a bit of a barrier and all that, but a bit of a reluctant superstar. But you'd think that when he, you know, nobody in the NHL's done that this year, get 6 points in a game, it kind of calls for a comment to me, but whatever, that's fine. But the other thing that made me laugh was John Cooper came back out after addressing the team and came to chat with us. And this guy is just a great personality. Like, and he's laughing and we're like, care to share why you're still laughing? And he says, okay. He says, just before I went in the room, I just talked to one of the coaches and said, like, who's our player of the game? And they all looked at each other and just said, well, Guentzel had a hat trick, so we'll give it to Guentzel. They go in the room and they say, hey, player of the game is Jake Guentzel. Guentzel says, are you kidding me? I'm not taking that. Cooch had 6 points. Cooch had 6 points. You got to give it to Cooch. The coaches all looked at each other. They had no idea that Kucherov had 6 points. Obviously, they were aware that he had a pretty good night, but none of them knew to what extent that evening went to. And so we asked him, so who'd you end up giving it to? He goes, well, no, we had already committed to Guentzel. He's our player of the game, but we screwed it up. We missed it. So it's become almost ho-hum when a guy like this does something like this. Remember, he won the Art Ross last year as the league's most prolific scorer. He dethroned Connor McDavid after three seasons. So we know he's got it in him. We know he's got incredible skill. He kind of quietly went about those 6 points. I think you'd probably agree. But some of those passes were absolutely world-class, and they were very Cooch-esque. And it was a treat to watch. Like, I won't forget that night. Kind of like you and I were talking earlier in the day about Jamie Benn coming to town years ago, posting 6 points while Tyler Seguin had 5 in the same night. And those are the nights you don't forget very easily.
No, I remember that night with Ben. It was November of 2013. Tyler Seguin had a 4-goal, 5-point night and was like, with a bullet, the second best player on the ice, because
yeah,
that's how good Jamie Benn was. You're like, oh my goodness, greatest I've ever seen Jamie Benn play in my entire life. And he's had a pretty long and successful NHL career. And you know, the first period, Kucherov was quite quiet. And then all of a sudden, earlier we talked about Huberdeau giving him that beautiful pass, and that pass goes right into the back of the net on the breakaway. And so that seemed to awaken number 86. And then in the second and third period, there were stretches where you're like, this guy is so next level and it is scary. And what he does on the power play, You just don't know what he's going to do. That fake shot from the right circle, if he takes it, he could score. But if he decides not to take it, well, he can bump it right to Braden Point, who's got 19 goals in 23 games this year. And, you know, Braden Point, the bumper, is maybe as dangerous as anybody in the NHL as well. Or he could go cross seam and, you know, maybe find somebody in the left circle instead. Like, I don't know if there is a more dangerous power play player in the NHL, and that includes Leon Draisaitl, that includes Connor McDavid, that includes Austin Matthews. I mean, this guy is ridiculous, the options he has.
Yeah. There. You have no idea, even watching when he gets to it. It all happens so quickly, and it's in the net. It's a real pleasure to watch that team play, and I know their bottom six is extremely suspect and probably the reason why they're not dominating like they did in years past. But I'll tell you what, they now have a top six that I'll put up against anybody's in the National Hockey League. I mean anybody's. Toronto, Vegas, you name it, Edmonton. Connor Geeky, to me, was one of the best players on the ice all night long. This is a youngster with tremendous size. His last year in junior, he had 99 points in 55 games, almost a goal a game. He's an absolute beast. And they've got him on that second line with Anthony Cirelli and Brendan Hagel, two of the best defensive forwards who also happen to be well over a point a game this year. Like, that's a top six that is absolutely terrifying no matter who you're playing.
Yeah.
Those guys are going to do damage. And like I said, Geeky and Hagel, we showed four separate saves that Vlad only had to make, I think, six saves in the first period last night. And four of them were like amazing saves, all of them generated by either Hagel or Connor Geeky. I just remember that name. Unless you're in my hockey pool, remember that name because this guy's going to be a star. I'm telling you, I was so impressed with him.
Well, and I know there were a lot of people in a lot of markets who were like, hold on a second, Cirelli and Hagel on Team Canada? Like, really? Do we get point, but Cirelli and Hagel? Well, I think they showed you some reasons why. We didn't see them on the penalty kill because the Lightning didn't have to kill any penalties, but they're very good penalty killers, but they're also pretty good players. You know, Cirelli scores a power play goal. I think he had 3 points. Hagel had a goal and an assist very quietly. Like, they showed you some pretty good indications why they're on Team Canada too.
Well, and I talked to both of them yesterday morning before the game about their role. And, you know, as John Cooper talked, you have a pretty good pipeline to the coach of Team Canada as well, because he's your coach every day. Like, do you expect your role will change at all for Team Canada? And I think ideally nobody would change their role on Team Canada, right? Everybody would play the sort of role they play now, but that's not possible. But for them, it is going to be. They will be the first two guys over the boards to kill any penalties for Team Canada. So they will play a hugely important role for Team Canada. John Cooper went as far as to me as to say he thinks Brandon Hagel is the best forechecker in the NHL. That's one. And then he also said to me that he goes, yeah, I know. He later said after he said, I know that Gensel had 3 goals tonight and I know Cooch had 6 points. But from the start of the year to now, those two guys are the two that are the two straws that have stirred our drink all year long. Like, that is an amazing statement on a team that has Braden Point scoring almost a goal a game. Yeah, a goal a game. And Kucherov, you know, 3 points off the NHL scoring lead. And you're going to be talking about those two guys as being the straw that stirs the drink on your team. Like, that's high praise. He said those guys 100% deserve to be on Team Canada. And you watch at the display they put on once the international tournament starts. So, you know, again, include all those guys in your top six, and it's pretty formidable.
Yeah, and let's not forget the Lightning also played without Victor Hedman the entire game.
Yeah,
and then lost Mosier. They were down to 5D and no Hedman. They're going to get Hedman and Chernak back. Like, still pretty good team, and that's still they're still a factor without a doubt in the Eastern Conference. So,
And a pretty good team comes in tomorrow too, right? A better team even maybe than Tampa from top to bottom.
Yeah, that's and they lost 4-0 in Vancouver, which is just added motivation for them coming into Calgary. It's funny, as we get set for the Panthers on Saturday night at the Dome, back half of Hockey Night in Canada, Flames are coming off this pretty embarrassing defeat, 8-3 against the Lightning. And look, over time, I've been taking post-game calls and emails and texts and stuff for 15 years. So over time, I react a whole lot less, hot takey to big-time losses than I used to. Like, if they got rolled up on a night, if they got beaten big on a night in the past, I'd be like, okay, I'm ready for some hot takes. And this guy's garbage, and this guy's no good. Well, like, I've kind of learned over the years that a blowout loss where you get kicked in the teeth, they happen. You know what it's indicative of 99% of the time? It's an indicator that you were bad that night. And it's not necessarily an indicator of massive core systemic issues. But I will say this, and after watching how the game unraveled on Thursday, which was only two games removed from them unraveling in the third period against Dallas in a blowout loss, which wasn't that far removed from them unraveling in a third period against Pittsburgh in what turned into a blowout loss. You know, they've now lost seven of their last nine games. They're 2-5-2. This team that we have been lauding, rightfully so, for being a very strong team defensively with good goaltending. All of a sudden, you know, they allowed five to Columbus. They allowed six to Pittsburgh. They allowed six to Dallas. They allowed eight against Tampa Bay, all in fairly recent memory. Are we witnessing anything? Like, are we seeing anything? Is this trend something that is indicative of something more?
Well, we all asked after the early start and even at the 20-game mark, is this sustainable? Mm-hmm. And how many people, hands up around the National Hockey League, fans, media, coaches, general managers, thought that it was sustainable? Exactly. Nobody. Do I think that this is a team that's going to get blown out the rest of the way? No. I think we're starting to see them kind of settle back to the median. Like, this is what it's going to be like, where they'll be, you know, a little bit more volatile. Give them full marks for just how consistent they were in terms of their goaltending and their work ethic. They're two ingredients to winning games. And we know that it's kind of unsustainable to go out and outwork every team every night. It's just not something that can happen in National Hockey League, especially as we get closer to the real important games in the final month of the season, where teams really turn it up a level. And it's probably even before that. So, you know, that's when, you know, the big boys really start to step up and you kind of get left behind. I think this team is still destined to be finishing exactly where we all kind of thought they would, which is somewhere in the mushy middle, right? Somewhere between being in the bottom 10 and getting to keep that first round draft pick in the Monahan trade and finishing in the playoffs, which I don't think anyone really still thinks is a thing. Give them credit. They're right there. If the playoffs started tomorrow, they would have missed it by one point. Right. And give them full credit. And it's not a time for anybody to say, I told you so. That's not what this is about at all. You asked me the question, like, what are we seeing here? And we're seeing what I think we expected them to see, what we expected to see from them. And look, I still think that even if the season ended right now and they missed it by one point, or however this ends and they still miss the playoffs, so far we've already seen some very positive signs in terms of growth. Devin Cooley is a great story. Rory Kearns is a great story. Like, you're not just measured this year. I've said this all along. I don't think you're measured just by the points you put up in the standings.
Right.
You're measured by the growth as an organization. Connor Zary, for my money, is the best forward on this team right now. I think he's been the best forward on the whole for the entirety of this schedule this year. I don't know where you think he ranks, but I think he's been the best forward. I certainly think he's the most exciting one to watch. And I think he's the one with a massive upside still. And I think everyone's really excited about him. Pospisil has kind of been up and down this year, but, you know, kind of maintained. And then what's happening down on the farm, you know, and soon we're going to start seeing, you know, better indication as to whether Jacob Pelche has developed enough to be an everyday NHLer. Walker Dewar, the early signs are good, but the small sample size is small. So, again, I think there's lots of Dustin Wolf has been the story of the year for the organization. So I don't want this to be a negative assessment as to what we're seeing right now. It's just kind of the early excitement and we're going to prove everybody wrong. I think that's worn off to a degree. And now reality set in that even their best, hardest working effort is probably not good enough against a handful of teams in the league and probably only good half the time against the middle half of the league. So that's kind of where I see it right now. I don't really think if I'm way off, but that's where I think we're. I don't think they're as bad as they've been in terms of the recent blowouts and the fact that they've won two of their last eight or nine or whatever the number was you said.
I do think that some of the things that were buoying them earlier have, you know, maybe become a little less effective or have been a little less impactful. The goaltending hasn't been as good, both Wolf and Vladar. I mean, I felt horrible for Vladar last night.
Oh, yeah.
8 on 26, and he was completely hung out to dry. But that is just an absolute crusher of a guy's statistics. And as much as guys tell you that they don't care about their statistics, when a goalie goes from 897 to, you know, whatever he is, 883 or whatever he's at now, when you drop that much in one game, yeah, they care, even if they're not going to admit it. The Dustin Wolf has struggled in his last three starts. So the goaltending hasn't been quite as good. Defensively, they've been far more leaky. I mean, one of the things that you could really point to with this team in the first 20, 25 games was how little they gave opposing teams, you know, good teams and bad teams. You'd say, geez, they sure didn't give that team much in a win or a loss, especially at 5-on-5. That is starting to rear its ugly head. They were winning games despite a poor penalty kill. Now they're kind of losing games because of a poor penalty kill. Tampa went 3-for-3 on Thursday. So I just, there's some things that were buoying them earlier that aren't doing the same thing now. And some of the problems that have existed throughout haven't necessarily been rectified. Like the penalty kill remains a problem. They're inability to score more than three goals remains a problem. They've done that once in their last 27 games. So I do think we are seeing maybe a slight correction because I think you and I and many others were on the same page. They probably weren't going to be a team fighting with Vegas for top spot in the Pacific Division throughout the year. But where I do think they belong is based on this roster right now. And that could change because we saw a roster that was very competitive last year that turned into a team that missed the playoffs by 17 points because some roster moves happened. And that could always happen between now and the trade deadline, and it just very well might. But right now, based on this roster, I think they should be in the mix, in the pack, and fighting. And that is, I do think that we're going to see them start winning more games than they've won here in the last nine. But I think they're probably going to be a group that, with this roster, remains in the fight, and we'll see how long this roster remains together.
That'll be interesting, right? To see how that all goes. That'll be a topic for another day. But you know, just as we part ways here, and it's always so sad when we have to say goodbye.
Worst part of my week, I won't lie.
It's your sign off for Friday. It's your favorite moment of the week.
I ever get a full weekend anyway.
That's true. But somebody had mentioned to me today that it's probably very likely that we have the 16 playoff teams in place right now. And it's funny because I don't look at the standings as often as I used to. And I looked at the standings right now, and I think they absolutely nailed it, with maybe one exception. The Rangers right now are 1 point behind Philadelphia for that final spot in the East wild card. And I do think the Rangers will get their act together and be a really good team by the end of this thing. And I don't think Philadelphia can stay in that race very long. So, but you know, it's just interesting. If you grab a newspaper or go online the next day, you know, 24 hours, just take a look at the standings and see if you agree that it's probably, I'd be pretty surprised if there were more than one or two changes in the playoff, 16 playoff teams right now, as per the standings as we speak. So just kind of an interesting way of looking at it.
Okay, buddy. Get out of here. I'll see you Saturday morning at Morning Skate. Great stuff, as always. Another successful Eric Francis Hour, I would suggest.
Yeah, you're funny. All right, buddy. Great to chat with you. We'll talk. We'll see you tomorrow.
Parting is such sweet sorrow. Bye, buddy. Eric Francis on Twitter, at Eric Francis. That's the Eric Francis Hour. Thanks to our producers, Cam and Sham, this hour. And the Eric Francis Hour brought to you, as always, by our friends at Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly.